Hello, and welcome to Academy Conversations Uncut, a podcast of rare Q&As with the world's foremost filmmakers, hosted by the Academy and released for the first time to the public, unedited. Today's panel was recorded in November 2019 at the Samuel Goldwyn Theater in Beverly Hills, California. Discussing the documentary film, 63 Up, the latest installment of the series that chronicles the same group of Brits every 7 years, who are now all 63, we were joined by director Michael Apted. The panel was hosted by Pat Morrison. Here's Pat.
Thank you, everyone, for coming. I'm Pat Morrison. Please welcome to the stage Michael Apted. You were trying to draw out the applause, I know.
Well, thank you for coming.
So 55 years since this has been going on. I don't mean to sound impudent, but is this the longest relationship in your life?
Not quite. I have a relationship with an English football team which started when I was 7.
Have they broken your heart?
Yes, constantly.
Well, see, so that prepares you for filming. In the course of making this, you had to have felt over the years, and perhaps all at the same time, like a friend, a confessor, a provocateur, as well as a filmmaker.
Yes, a father figure or someone they can take their bad feelings on. Out of? What am I babbling about here?
Was the relationship sustained over the 7 years in between each?
No, we left it alone between them. You know, I didn't want to be shadowing their lives. I didn't want them to be thinking that they have to put on a performance for me. And so even if lots of interesting things happened in a seventh year, if it didn't kind of fit into what was clearly going on, then I wouldn't touch it. Otherwise, these films you'd be here for 3 weeks watching it.
Did they reach out to you at all, or did they try to get about with their lives and in those 7 years in between? Such a magical number, 7 years.
Yeah, no, but we kind of check up with them, you know, once a year, just to make sure all is well, or they will tell us if things aren't well, you know, things that would affect the work we're going to do. So, but I just didn't want to be in their lives all the time. You know, I wanted to be in the audience's point of view, to see them, my God, they've changed and all that kind of stuff. Whereas if I had a close relationship with them, I'd know all that.
This was the 9th in the series. I hadn't seen the earlier ones, but just watching this one, I felt so emotionally invested in who they were and how their lives had changed that I can imagine that's only a fraction of how you felt.
Yeah, but I mean, I think we sort of got it right. It's got a good balance to it. You know, it's because there's so much material, it's ludicrous. And that's when we only film them, you know, every 7th year. So, you know, you want to keep it swift and you know, not to fill the film up with stuff that you couldn't possibly follow. You know, that everything has to be kind of fixed on the seventh year. Well, now, obviously, there's things I cheated on, and like when Bruce got married, we went to shoot that or something like that. But I try and keep it as honorable as I can to the 7th year. Otherwise, I'd have so much material, I'd kill myself.
But you did have to leave things on the cutting room floor, of course. Anything that you were desperately attached to?
That I had to, yeah, you bet. No, there is. That's why you have to buy the set. You can well, pay a bit more. Well,
now we know we get the box set for Christmas then.
That's right. We
saw at the end, so this has been a glimpse of Britain's future. Was it really? Because Britain is so different nowadays when it seems to come to class and race. And
yeah, I think so their lives are different than mine was when I was growing up. You know, England has changed, dramatically. And we kind of fortunately got a nice period with it. You know, there was huge change. You can hardly believe what England was like when we started, you know, in whatever that was, 1964. It was a different world. Not necessarily a worse world, or necessarily a better world now, but it has changed a lot.
I was thinking how immensely different it would look if you were to start now with the racial composition, the number of men versus women, boys versus girls.
Well, I mean, I got caught out with some of that. I mean, the big thing that not a disaster for me, God forbid, but, you know, women came coming into society roaring. And, you know, we didn't miss it, but it happened so quickly. When you think of the 14 people that we chose, only 4 were women. I mean, you know, you wouldn't like that, would you, if you said it was run by men. Well, it was. But it's once I got the thing in motion, there's no way out of it. I mean, I cheated. You know, I used the wives of some of the boys who were very interesting. But it was...
And not shy.
And are women ever shy?
Vox pop right out there.
There you go. No, I've lost my train of thought because I was trying to be clever.
The wives who were speaking out and
I had
a female
to
presence.
Choose them, you know, use them very carefully and all that. But, you know, there were 10 men to 4 women. And somehow I had to push in wives and ex-wives and stuff like that to keep it balanced. Because it did happen very fast, the way that women, you know, came into society in positions of power. I mean, when you think that, you know, when we did this one, when you did the first one, it was only 10 years before Margaret Thatcher was doing her business, as we say. So, I mean... That's what we say, yes. And we hold our breath and pretend it didn't happen.
I think we know the feeling.
Yeah.
As well as you knew all of these people, did they surprise you throughout these 7-year intervals? Yeah. Even disappoint you?
Well, no, I don't think. I mean, some were unlucky and all that sort of thing. But this is a ridiculous way to put it, but I didn't feel as their father that they'd let me down. They were all kind of, you know, they worked hard and they all had clean lives. I mean, I didn't have to go into prison to see.
As you said at the outset, Tony said you expected me to be in the nick by now.
Yeah, I mean, it was a 99% certainty would be. it's a miracle he wasn't, frankly, but... it's just a very alive, you know. I was just sitting there thinking, if we ever get to the next one, you know, what's going to be the big changes then, for God's sake, you know, because it is. And we, it was all luck, but we did find, you know, a place in England's history where there was a lot of change. A lot of spectaculars, and having a woman prime minister was the least of it, you know. So we managed to navigate it without it being a sort of nothing film when nothing happened. So a lot was going on, and thank God, you know. But it was difficult, and I had to use, as I said, some some of the ladies who were not directly in the film but were married into the film.
Your film, your feature film work, includes films like Coal Miner's Daughters and Gorillas in the Mist, which are about formidable women.
Yes.
And so was that why we saw more of the voices, the perhaps one step removed voices?
Yes. I mean, I was always incredibly interested in women who had made a life. Because my mother was very smart, but she never had a job. I mean, she never had a paying job.
Can we get
job.
You a little bit on the mic more?
Yeah. What? Oh. No, my mother was a very bright, clever woman who had to bring up three children. And my father didn't make much money, so, you know. But my mother was a very dominant figure in my life. And women were dominant in a lot of people's lives, but it was never kind of manifest in the world we lived in. You know, you wouldn't think that, but when you look at what's going on now, you know, you wish there were a lot more women up there. But it was always going to be women orientated, because that was the big revolution, even if it was going pretty slowly. And that gave me the core of the whole thing. And you know, these movies I did were always about women. It's ridiculous. So I mean, women who did well, one way or another, you know, whether it was Loretta Lynn or whatever. I was always so moved by that, because they had such a tough time getting into the society, whether they're in the Appalachians or in London or whatever. It was hard for women to get into society and to get in as to make money, to be independent, and not fall into the, you know, well, this is a terrible thing, but not having children straight away when they were 19 or 20 and being stuck with that, as it were, I can't find the word, but that obligation.
As at least one of the women in here was talking about, no, I'm not going to have any kids, ends up having kids.
Yeah.
But clearly she saw that her choices, were she to do so, were limited.
Yeah. Well, women, you know, there were some, I mean, you know, all these films I did before for Continental Divide and things like that, there were a lot of eccentric women in it as well, you know. You know, it's not normal to go and live in a mountaintop for 15 years, is it? Looking after eagles.
I don't know. This is America.
Eh? But anyway, yes. Yeah, sorry, I'm being frivolous.
Well, over the course of all of this, while you were doing this, you were doing all of your films. You were doing television. You've done Ray Donovan. You've done Masters of Sex. So talk a little bit about moving from each of those media, from documentaries to feature films to television, and how that works in your life and why you've sought that balance.
Well, that's how my life in the entertainment business started. You know, I went into Granada Television, who were a terrific place to be, and you know, this is their work and all that. So there was a lot of opportunity, and Granada was a very red-hot place. You know, the BBC had been running the world, as it were, or at least the British world, and making a bit of a mess of it, and making it all Victorian and all that, and then Granada came in and farted all over the place and really changed,
A word BBC would never use, of course.
No, of course not. They wouldn't even know what I was talking about. But they're great people, and of course they pulled themselves together and quickly to resume their place at the top of the world. But no, but really they were asleep, and then Granada came along and woke them up, and I was part of the waking up of the BBC. Sounds silly, doesn't it? But it was. So you know, that's how it happened.
And so for each of these sorts of filmmaking then, what particular satisfaction does each give you? And does each enhance the other? Is it synergy?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, I couldn't do what what I've done in drama or something if I hadn't done these documentaries. My interest in women's lives and all that, which just became really the spinal cord of the movies. You know, even as you say, things like gorillas and whatever. And of course, it was in my blood because I was my mother's son, and I could see the world changing from a woman's point of view. And that's why I chose those films, because that's where everything was happening, you know, not men, you know, with guns and all this kind of stuff. What was really happening in societies all over the Western world was women were moving in, and still are, and annoying men by doing it. It's amazing the amount of, you know, disrespect women who are successful are, you know, held by a generation of men like me.
Man, no. I thought you were on our side, though.
Yes, I am on your
side. Well.
Yes, I am. But anyway, I mean, that was really always, that's the kind of key to the work. And I suppose in some ways it was a simple idea. That's why I could move from television, you know, into doing theater, all sorts of things, because there was always one kind of element to all those things, whether it was doing Coronation Street, and it's, God knows, I mean, it's still going. I think I did episode 4,000 or something. It makes all you lot here ridiculous. They've been doing it for, what, nearly over 40 years they've been doing
it. So not quite as long as the Up series, but
no,
they're gaining on you. Right. Yes, oh, well.
Yeah, they started before we did. Anyway, I've lost my way now. But
just the different aspects of making a documentary, a feature film, television, and what each satisfies for you, whether it's a short deadline or a long arc of creativity, yeah, all at the same time, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always trying to fulfill the dramatic demands of whether it's a documentary or whether it's a soap opera or whatever. That it has to have a beginning, middle, and an end. And, you know, I got taught that twice, three times over, one by learning how to do, you know, films or, you know, stories, things like that, and doing documentaries where, you know, where it's a whole different brain thing. But the more you do the different things, I think the more you learn. And, you know, I mean, I would never have done something like the two, you know, on Indian movies. What were they called? I've forgotten.
Your Indian movies?
My Indian movies.
Well, yes. Let's get your Wikipedia page out, and we'll find out what they are.
You know, but that was because I did them jointly. I did the documentary first, and then I did the movie.
So there were things you couldn't do with the documentary that you thought, if I make a feature film, I can do that.
Yeah.
And that's how...
Vice versa sometimes, you know. They haven't always been, you know, doing a piece of make-believe and then finding the real thing of that. But, I mean, I think it always helped me do whichever I was doing, because, you know, it was such different worlds for women or men, you know, whether they're working... I've lost my train of thought here, but... Anyway, I mean...
That's what happens when you privatize the trains, right?
Yeah, so. Thank you very much. But also, I mean, it helped me work with men and women too, since I, you know, my first big movies were with women, you know, so, you know, which was pretty tough.
The advances in technology and filmmaking have been stupendous over the past 50 some years. Have those appealed to you, or have you leaned back from them? Why is that?
Because it doesn't interest me. I mean, I admire it. I mean, I did James Bond with people jumping off things and what all that, and that's fun and everything. But I must say that I get a kind of quick heart attack when I go and see some of the films that are now put out, these generations, which are total fantasies and all that sort of stuff, and usually terrifically violent. But you know, my whole background was the real world. You know, whether I was dealing with women or men, they were real social issues, which God knows there are still thousands of those things now. But it seems that, you know, there aren't that many of those sort of films being made. And if they are, they're usually at the bottom end or low end of the budget, so they're not appealing necessarily to the younger population.
Why do you suppose that is? Is it about cultivating tastes? Because we were talking about Billy Wilder earlier. You look at the storylines of the 30s, the 40s, yeah, the 50s, and they were storylines. They were character-driven.
Well, the storylines now are sort of guided by technology. What can we do now? What can we do? Well, what can we put in the air? Or go upside down or inside out? Or have people have three heads and all this kind of stuff? It's rather moved the... You know, the simple, I don't know, but I mean, you know, just the simplicity of the human life, which is, God knows, incredibly complicated, is not kind of dealt with so much. All that, the money is going into fantasy all the time. I don't know how it's going to end, but, you know, you wonder. The cost of these films is staggering, and once they have two or three bad years, you know, where will they be going?
As I was watching this, I was thinking, what would the American version of the Up series be like? You've lived here for a long time. You did The Wedding.
No, I mean, I did. I lost my mind. We did 7 Up and 14 Up and 21 Up in America. It's very interesting. A lot of countries picked it up to do it. Only three countries did it ever succeed. Mine, clearly. It's now it's 15, you know, whatever. The other... One of the others was South Africa, and the other one was Russia. So you think, why? And then you think, my God, you know, these people went through major changes. The whole business with South Africa and everything, which involved the whole country. I mean, Russia has had a terrible time for centuries. The people have been mistreated for generations. So then if you've got that going for you, then you can see where things are changing. And, you know, the thing with what we were doing with there was a big change in England and whatever. And, I mean, America was a catastrophe because the entertainment world was splattered all over the place. And if you're going to make this film, you've got to own it all. Because you're going to always want to go back into history. And unless you own it, you can't do it.
Literally own it.
I mean, you know, we only got like through two American ones, which were very interesting. But when we got to the third one, different companies had done the first one and the second one. Then we had to negotiate with them to buy it. And the costs became huge. But the reason, this is wandering a bit, but I always like this story, is that, you know, why South Africa and why Russia and no one else? And, you know, I thought about it, and then it sort of occurred to me that in Russia, society is changing all the time in a dramatic way. So then Russians have got a way of talking about how their country is changing. South Africa is a much more sadistic story because they're still being devastated by AIDS, which I was astonished about because I always thought Mandela and all that was part of it, but apparently not. People are dying all the time with AIDS. And so, you know, for a South African audience, they're going to get an update every 7 years about how many people are dead.
Like a yardstick of society. So
They're the only ones that were done with mine, which had a real spine to them and really couldn't be done anywhere.
Well, Michael Apted, we'll see you in 7 years.
Yeah.
Won't you please thank him?
Thanks for listening to Academy Conversations Uncut. We hope you enjoyed this unique access to a members-only Q&A at the Academy. Be sure to like, share, and subscribe, and help us reach film lovers around the world. This podcast was produced by the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences.